Right, good afternoon, everybody. I think afternoon. In my time zone, it's quite late. I have one watch for each time zone to try and keep track of things. But yeah, I'm very happy to be here. I've presented a few conferences, various places all over the world, but this is my first DEF CON ever, so I'm really, really excited to be here. And yeah, really happy to have such a big turnout, so thank you everyone for coming along. And what I'll be talking about today is stuff that really excites me and stuff that I'm really passionate about. And what I hope is that you guys will see that it's cool and you guys will get excited too. And maybe we can collaborate and come up with some ideas together because, you know, all of you guys put together are much, much smarter than me. So perhaps I can start off with some ideas and we can take it somewhere else together. So today's talk, Practical Aerial Hacking and Surveillance. And yeah. I'm Glenn. Now, this is a story of one flyaway, two broken rotor arms, three cut fingers, which have since healed, and 12,000 lines of code. I couldn't find enough iterations to go from 3 to 12,000, so I skipped a few there. But just to tell you a little bit about myself, my name's Glenn, my lucky number is 11. If you do the whole Twitter thing, you can bug me on Twitter. I'm originally from Zimbabwe, a small landlocked country in Southern Africa. Has anyone heard of Zimbabwe? Nice. Been to Zimbabwe? Oh, man. One guy. Two guys. All right. Well, you're all invited. It's a lovely country. As a Rhodes Scholar, I studied at the University of Oxford. So I have my computer science master's degree from there. And I currently work at a small penetration testing company called SensePost. Our main office is in South Africa. I work for the London office, and I mostly do penetration testing. Recently, I've been running a small innovation center, a small innovation lab, but awesome place to work. I'm really, really happy there. And part of what we do at SensePost, all our guys get 20% research time, and in that time, we get to go and play with cool stuff and get flown to conferences and yeah, have a whole lot of fun. As I mentioned, I've spoken at a few conferences before, so all over the world, from Moscow to Paris to South Africa and a whole bunch of other places. I'm occasionally on the news, but enough about me. I'd like to welcome those of you who were here last year. Very briefly, in about 10 minutes of just having a quick look, I can see about 20 or 30 of you in this room were here last year, so welcome back. I'll tell you a little bit about that later. And welcome to those of you who are traveling from quite far abroad. I see there's people here from all over the world who, although are at a security conference, are not very security conscious. But enough about that. Let's get into the actual talk. So the title of the talk is Practical Aerial Hacking and Surveillance. Now, it's a whole bunch of funny stuff right there. What do I actually mean, and what is this all about? So some time back, I kind of had the idea, I've seen a lot of stuff in the media about drones and flying machines, and I've always loved RC stuff, RC cars, RC planes as a kid, and more recently, these slightly more complex ones. And I noticed they started getting quite a bad name in the media. So I don't call this thing a drone anymore. I call it a UAV or my toy helicopter because I say drone and people look at me funny and get quite uncomfortable. And it's actually an interesting feeling that I felt before. So growing up as a teenager and kind of getting into the hacker scene and wanting to be a hacker and learning stuff, back then, if you kind of told someone that you were a hacker or you're hacking stuff, they had a very negative reaction and they kind of didn't feel quite comfortable with you. They knew that in the media they had seen, stuff, hacking is bad and these hackers are terrible and they must go to jail. And I think now we've kind of progressed and society's kind of accepted us and things are much, much warmer. But now I get the same feeling when I talk about drones and these flying machines. I think because of the way things are portrayed in the media, people are a little bit unsure, a little bit uncomfortable. They don't really understand them. And that's probably fueled by all the terrible reports we see of, drones in foreign countries dropping bombs and they're going to take over the world and all sorts of things. I thought we were kind of on par, but, a month ago it cut up my fingers really bad. So now I know that, he is boss, but we still have quite a nice relationship. So I also noticed that in the media, there was all kinds of stories about drones being used for kind of surveillance, data interception, not so much on the data interception side, a lot on the just surveillance, so cameras and I guess old school surveillance, and a little bit on more digital surveillance. And I kind of got to thinking, well, you know, that looks fun. I love flying things. I love hacking. Maybe I can take these two passions and put them together and try and create my own aerial hacking machine. And so that's where my story started. I wanted to put something together for myself that was affordable, didn't cost millions of dollars, was comprised of kind of off-the-shelf hardware and open-source software that anybody can build. I also had a few other requirements. So I wanted to build possibly a range of devices. I wanted something that had both short range and agility, and also something with long range, so something that could fly for tens or hundreds or maybe even thousands of kilometers and operate at an altitude beyond what we call the audio horizon, or the visual horizon, so higher than you can see it or hear it, so it can detect what's going on down below. And yeah, I wanted something that had low noise and low visibility. Quite often I find when I talk about this stuff, people kind of say, well, if I see it buzzing around my head, I'm going to shoot it or swat it or something. And yeah, it's not going to happen when it's at 300 feet and going 60 kilometers an hour. So I talk a lot and the slides, that's still the right slide, don't worry. I don't like having lots of text. It distracts you guys. You don't pay attention. I like to tell stories, so watch me. Don't worry about that. I also wanted to have a range of sensors, so both kind of standard sensors like video and telemetry, which is fairly standard for these flying machines, but then also couple that with a degree of stuff that I'm good at, so hacking and data interception and those kinds of things. I also wanted to have a degree of autonomous flight. So not just a radio controller and kind of buzzing around the room here. I wanted to be able to fly for a very long way and for it to be able to fly itself there and fly back. And if anything goes wrong, it should be able to fly itself home. So those are the ideas that I kind of put together. I heard rumor of this. I thought because I started talking, you guys had forgotten. At the London Hackspace, where I fly a lot, we have an expression: "Don't drink and drone."
Well, new speaker, show him some love. Congratulations!
He's watching you too. Thank you.
You're welcome, as you were.
Thank you. So, now that my mind is clear. So the idea was, I saw a lot of this drone activity in the media. I liked building drones and flying drones. And I thought, hey, can I make my own surveillance drones? And I've built one, and I'd like to tell you a story about how I built it. So some of the reports that I said I've seen in the media, if you just search for drone and data interception or something like that, you just get lots and lots of results. There's a few here. Eyes over Compton, police spied on a whole city with some high-altitude drone. CIA flew stealth drones into Pakistan. This one's interesting. U.S. Army Hummingbird, this A-160 Hummingbird. It's got a 1.8 gigapixel camera, and that can track people, down to this kind of size from 20,000 feet, which is pretty cool, and can track 65 people at the same time, which is really badass. But this one's fairly recent. African firm selling pepper spray bullet firing drones. That's that guy on the bottom on the far side. It's called the Skunk, and it's a six rotor, fairly big one. It's got four paintball turrets, and it shoots pepper spray pellets, and it's got a strobe light and loudspeakers. And it's actually terrifying. So if you ever do come visit us in South Africa, watch out for those guys. Now, one thing I'm trying to be vigilant of, and if you guys know a guy called Harun Mir, that's him not in the armor, and excellent security researcher, and he had this talk, a talk about pen testing, or talk about InfoSec, and he kind of warned the security industry not to be contertainers, as he called them. So don't just entertain the crowd, actually do some interesting, proper research. And I'm hoping today maybe I can do both, entertain you guys and have some interesting research, or at least a few interesting stories. At least on the note of the drone stuff, I've seen a whole bunch of stories in the media where you take an existing hack, some duct tape, and you kind of strap it to an off-the-shelf drone and then portray it as something terrifying and new and interesting. But it's I'm a bit suspicious of those types of stories. So hopefully I'm not doing that, but up to you guys to judge me. Okay, so an overview of my aerial hacking and surveilling unit. So there are four considerations that I went through when building this thing. So one, I needed an aerial platform. So some kind of flying machine, unrelated to kind of the snooping and data interception, just something to carry the tech around. And there's a few considerations when deciding what kind of solution is best for you. The next point, a degree of ground control / automation. So how do you fly the thing? Do you use a controller like this, or do you fly it from your iPhone, or is it fully autonomous, or something else perhaps? So how does the damn thing fly? And then, of course, the interesting part, the payload. So the hacking, surveilling payload. So what form factor should it be? Like big, small, how is it powered? What software is it running? And how does it do its thing? And then finally, a degree of a methodology. So how do you get this thing to do its business? Are they just silly contrived examples, or can this stuff actually be used practically? That's why I've got the word practical in the talk. So I really want this stuff to, you know, not just be stunt hacking, but something actually useful. So we'll have a look at the methodology and a few use cases that, yeah, I think are quite interesting. And I'm sure between us, there's a whole bunch of you here. You can probably come up with a few interesting use cases yourself. Okay, so first point, the aerial platform, the actual flying machine. So it's at least four considerations, probably a few more, but four serious ones. So first decision, do you want to use multi-rotor or fixed wing? So multi-rotor just means lots of propellers. Essentially, three is kind of the minimum. So three, four, five, up to eight. You can get some octocopter, so eight propellers. And sometimes you have top and bottom. So one motor up, one motor down, and then you have 16. Those things are gargantuan. The considerations you need to make are you lifting very heavy stuff? What is your flight time that is required? What's the actual size of the copter? So the really big ones with like 16 rotors or something, that's great if you need to carry, a barrel of beer or something, which actually is a very good business idea. We tried it in South Africa, but got shot down. luckily, double quotes. So for our purposes, this kind of size is sufficient for carrying the payload, and I've got a much smaller one, but that first poster you saw, the flyaway, I just finished building it for the conference. I tested it on London, my first flight after a month of building it just for you guys, and it flew away. Clearly didn't want to come. But if you know guys in London and they find a small quadcopter, please bring it back to me. But this kind of size is pretty good. It can carry about 300 gram payload, and we'll see in a little bit that that's perfectly sufficient. But in terms of distance, we may need a fixed wing, and we'll see on the next slide a little bit more about that. The flight controller, that's the brains. So these quadcopter drone things, they have what's called a flight controller. It's just the brains. It's that little unit on top. This one. And so this one is Arduino-based and has all kinds of interesting functions. The kind of base for a flight controller is that it has some degree of orientation. So they have different ones have different properties, but at least, you know, maybe a gyroscope, a barometer, so it knows how high it is, accelerometers, those kinds of sensors, just so knows its orientation. It actually makes them incredibly easy to fly. It's much easier than a helicopter or any other traditional RC units, basically because I just say go up, And the computer decides, okay, I need to put this power on this motor, this one on this one. Okay, there's some wind, so I need to compensate and go this way. And because of the flight control, it's actually incredibly easy to fly. But there are some decisions on which one to get. It's almost like the OS wars in our sphere. Cameras. So, we'll look at a few different kinds of cameras. Essentially, do you want high resolution, long range, short range, FPV, infrared, and then a GPS. So GPS has two functions. The bit sticking out the top of that one is a GPS used for navigation. So it knows where it is, which is useful for if I tell it to fly 10 clicks that way. Or if there's a strong wind and it's being blown off course, it knows, hey, I'm off course. I need to compensate and go a little bit more east. I also have a GPS unit, and I'll talk about it a bit later. Essentially, if I lose it, if it flies away or if it gets captured, there's a homing beacon on it, and I can just essentially send a text message to the homing beacon, and it texts back with its GPS coordinates. So in this picture here, winged versus multi-rotor, have an example of a winged unit on the side here. So the winged units vary from very, very small to, the penguin is one of my favorites. That's not a penguin, that's an Aero A, I think, but the penguin is a really big fixed-wing one. And it comes down to largely your payload and your range. So this guy, about 300 gram payload, but the battery life's only about 15 minutes. That's useful for different scenarios. So say if I just need to do a short distance or go up the side of a building or land on a roof or something. If you want a longer range, guys like the Penguin, these fixed wing jobbies, you can get about 300 kilometers of range out of them, which is phenomenal. So you can effectively scour, an entire country, or at least across a few states, a few borders. And yeah, so I was looking at, I want either long range or short range, depending on a few criteria, low noise, and a decent payload. In the end, I kind of realized this is a good form factor. So four rotor, about, I think it's a 40 centimeter diameter, and then also a bigger fixed wing plane, which I couldn't bring here because it's really big, but for longer range missions. So the flight controller, which I briefly mentioned, the brains of the unit. So the picture you see on your top left, that's this one I've got here. That's made by a company called 3D Robotics. It's called the Arducopter or the APM. And it's very, very popular these days. It's open source hardware, so you can kind of modify it or make your own. And also, all the software is open source too. So you can go and download the source code. And if you wanted to modify it, an important lesson I've learned, I'm not a very good programmer. And, if I write software on my laptop, let's just try it and see if it works. Oh, it crashes. Never mind. Let's try again. You can't take those risks with flying machines because you can't just do some debugging at 300 feet and see if it falls out the sky because that's that's not a very clever approach. So, the guy up on this side is, I can't see my mouse pointer, on the left is the APM from 3D Robotics, open source. The one in the middle here is an Open Pilot, which is a very, very popular project. And I think it's also open source and you can put the Open Pilot software on other flight controllers too. The green one is the KK board. It's a little bit big, I think. Very, very popular. My favorite at the moment is the red one. So the red one's called a NAZE32, N-A-Z-E-32. And it's an amazing project. It's a one-man job. It's this guy called Time Cop. And it's just one man who designed the board, built it, and he solders each one by himself and kind of ships them. So it's a little bit hard to get a hold of them. And I think, this one's closed source at the moment. The red one at the bottom is, I suspect, one you guys may have heard of. It's called the NASA by a company called DJI. Now, you guys probably know the Phantom. The Phantom's the one you always see in the news. It's the white quadcopter with the kind of red stripes on its arms. It's kind of buy it, ready to fly. And that's a flight controller that they use. Closed source, proprietary, kind of the windows of this this group of things here with other guys or maybe more Linux or BSD. And you have the exact same wars as you do with the OS wars. So you have people who pick one of them and back them completely ignorantly saying, no, this one's the best. You guys don't know what you're talking about. There are some issues with the open source ones in that they do seem to be fairly immature and they push features a bit more than reliable code. And you have this thing called a flyaway. And there's the flyawayclub.com or the Twitter handle flyaway. And it's basically when one of these boards locks up, and typically just the last pattern it had, so go left, it'll just go left forever, which is horrible, as I know, first experience now. Has anyone ever had a flyaway? Oh, that's terrible. I'm sorry, guys. I feel your pain. Geez, at least five in the audience. That's horrible. Anyway, go to flyawayclub.com and register it. And we have monthly meetings and talk about our feelings of our drones that left us. Okay, so choosing the right flight control is quite important. Another nice aspect of, say, the APM here is you can interface with it. So because it's based on Arduino, it's got a set of GPIO pins. So you can like build your own hardware that interfaces with it, which is very useful for our type of scenario here. And we'll see why in a little bit. Cameras, another very important consideration. So my guy over here, he's got a GoPro camera mounted underneath for high definition recording, and then a small black Sony camera, the one you see on the screen here, for what we call a first person view. And essentially what that means is you get a live video feed from the machine as it flies, which is amazing. So just wear these goggles, and the image you see on the bottom right is the image that you see through the goggles. And yeah, these things are awesome. They have a small camera on the front too, so you can get a view from your face if you want to get some orientation or avoid walking into a tree. But very useful for long-range flights. As soon as you go beyond line of sight, yeah, very useful to know where you are, where you're going. Also, as you can see, it's got an on-screen display. So you've got your compass heading, your altitude, your airspeed, a pointer pointing towards home if you get lost. So yeah, very, very useful feature. Slightly more advanced cameras, so these two ones here, the Golden Eye, the red one, slightly more sophisticated camera. For this one, it wouldn't fit on this unit. This goes on the fixed wing, the big one. Now, this gives you much better resolution from a higher altitude. So this camera you would use for kind of 300-meter altitude to be able to see, you know, kind of things this big on the floor. Bit expensive, very nice piece of kit. The one next to it is an infrared camera. So depending on the images you want to create, if you can have, you know, if you're flying at night, I guess, so you have a nice detailed camera, an infrared camera, can combine those things together to, you know, get a nice lock on your target. GPS, so as I mentioned, the thing on the flag at the top, that's a GPS used for flight. So the device knows where it is, and you know, it's actually, I just push up and it goes up. You can have a hurricane blowing and it'll just keep itself in that position because it keeps a lock on the GPS, and the flight controller adjusts the motors to make sure it stays on the exact target. But you also use the GPS for setting flight paths, waypoints. And we'll see some waypoint software in a minute. But essentially, you can set a series of waypoints. The other GPS device on the left, so that's called a MyLiFi. Fly it, lose it, find it, and it's just a kind of self-enclosed GPS device with a SIM card. And if I lose the thing, if it flies away, you just interact with that device, and it'll send you the GPS coordinates. When I lost mine, I did have this device, but it was in my pocket, which wasn't very useful. Hindsight is a cruel, cruel thing. Some other considerations. So the battery, the one I'm running here, it's 5,000 milliamp hours. It's basically a recipe of power versus weight. So you get a bigger battery, it's heavier, it needs more power to lift it. There are some very clever maths that you can do, and there's some websites that will do the maths for you, and you kind of put in your motor specs, your props, and the battery, and I'll calculate the optimal battery to have. Essentially, they're not great. So this is about 15 minutes of flight time. If I spent a lot of money, I could get a battery that would maybe get me 45 minutes. But still, the multi-rotors are fairly low-ish flight time compared to the fixed wings. The fixed wings, you know, a few hours of flight time. The ESCs, those are electronic speed controllers. Those just control the motors. And then actual motors and propellers. You look at the metrics, like essentially kind of how fast they spin. And the metric is how much torque, which how much lift, like what's the payload it can lift? Do you want to lift heavy stuff or do you want to go quickly? So here's a diagram illustrating kind of the form factor practicality. So the one on the bottom left, that's the Phantom, which most enthusiasts have and the media are terrified of, and they think they're very fancy, but those are really toys. So very low barrier to entry, and for our purposes, not that practical. You can't fly beyond line of sight too easily, not much payload, the cameras aren't so fancy, it's closed source flight controllers, they can't expand on it too much. The one over here, it's not a specific model, but it's the idea of, you know, the APMs and the open pilots and custom frames and custom props and the ability to kind of expand and add add to it. And then a small fixed wing, so kind of a foam fixed wing one here, a little bit longer range, maybe a bit more payload. And then the Penguin up here, which, you know, is quite a big craft. And yeah, nice payload, long range, really good for surveillance. Some other considerations, so ground control, automation, so how do you fly the thing? So the radio here, with this big antenna, which makes TSA feel very uncomfortable. Note to self, take it off next time. So this is a fairly standard radio. I've upgraded it with this big transmitter, so it's a 1-watt transmitter, so it's got about 6 kilometers range. Depending which country you're in, it might be illegal, so you can scale it down to 100 milliwatts. That's kind of for flying, you know, mostly within, either with the goggles out of range or essentially within around 6 kilometers range. The device at the top, so that's some automated flight software. So essentially, from my tablet, I can connect to the flight controller, and I can see all kinds of metrics. So what's the horizon? What are the GPS coordinates? What flight mode is it in? And you can set waypoints. So you can say, right, I want you to fly here, 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 at these altitudes, and go. And it'll just fly itself. You know, it can go far out of range from your controller. It doesn't matter. And so that's very useful for our purposes. The most interesting is devices like the ones on the bottom left there. So that's a very new product over here from a company called Drone Deploy. And essentially what they've created is this thing called a co-pilot. And remember I mentioned these APM devices have the ability to plug in kind of external hardware to control it and to interface with it. So they've built this device here. And this co-pilot plugs into the flight controller. It's got a SIM card and it's got outbound data connection to essentially a cloud service. So you log on to the Drone Deploy, your Drone Deploy account, and you can see all of your drones on the web page wherever in the world they are, because, you know, the co-pilot has a SIM card, it has LTE data, and essentially you can control a fleet of these things from this lovely web interface, a nice layer of abstraction from the actual device. And that's actually really useful for us when you want to be kind of identifying individuals, tracking individuals for long periods of time, far beyond line of sight. Here's just an example of Q Ground Control, which is an open source bit of software. So they've got a few packages you can download, but it's open source, so you can build your own Q Ground Control software to control these devices. And you can see here I've set up a flight plan to fly around the city here. Of course, I didn't, because it's illegal to fly over any kind of private property or people without consent. And yeah, so this is Drone Deploy, the website I just mentioned. Yeah, definitely check these guys out. They're working on some very cool tech. And the ability to control lots and lots and lots of these drones from a web interface, you know, kind of in the cloud, or from your phone, very, very powerful. Okay, so we have the flying machine. We have the ability for it to fly, either controlling it or completely autonomous, long range. And we also have that kind of Drone Deploy bit of kit that, you know, it can tell the drone where to fly based on some other information. So that's where the payload comes in. So the payload is the actual hacking kit on the machine. And the hacking kit will do the surveilling and the detection of people and breaking into whatever infrastructure. And it can also feed information to the flight controller and say, hey, I detect quite a strong signal in that direction. Let's fly that way and drop water balloons on that target over there. And as you can probably guess, or you may have seen me speak before, so I've developed some software called Snoopy. That's why Snoopy's flying the plane there. And so Snoopy is some software I've been developing for the last couple of years. It's all open source. You can see it on GitHub there. To describe it in kind of a sentence, Snoopy is a distributed tracking, profiling, and data interception framework. It runs on anything that runs Linux. So, for example, I've got a BeagleBone here, or a Raspberry Pi, or something like that. Also, I've got an N900 cell phone, which runs Linux, amazing phones. And essentially, what it does, you have kind of an array of these sensors, and you can scatter them over some large area, attach some to drones, some on the ground. And they have a series of plugins that collect various bits of data and send that data to a central server. Now, what kind of data? So given that we're interested in surveillance and hacking, the kind of stuff that I mess with, this thing's got a Wi-Fi adapter. So all of you guys have left your Wi-Fi on, which is most of you, it seems. You may or may not know, if you've left your Wi-Fi on, even if you're not using it, your phone is constantly sending out these things called probe requests, which basically are it looking for every network you've ever connected to. So you're sitting in the audience, but your phone is looking for your home network, you know, back in South Africa. And included in that is your MAC address, so I can uniquely identify all you guys. And from the names of your networks, I can figure out stuff about you. So if your phone is looking for Bank of America corporate Wi-Fi, yeah, you probably work for Bank of America. But possibly of more interest, there's an amazing website called wiggle.net, W-I-G-L-E, and it's a crowdsourced war driving database. It spawned from DEF CON about 12 years ago. I'm not sure if any of the guys are here, but I'd love to meet them and buy them a beer, and you guys should go and contribute to their project. But essentially, it allows you to convert a network name, like Verizon 12345, to GPS coordinates. So that's what I do with Snoopy. You guys left your phones on, identifying the audience. I figure out what networks you're looking for, and I can figure out where you live, where you work, where you travel. And that's why I built the map at the beginning. Snoopy's modular, which means you can add your own code and your own devices to it. At the moment, I have support for Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, working on GSM and iBeacon. But essentially, what Snoopy looks for and the way we're going to track people and surveil people is based on what we've kind of coined at SensePost, the digital terrestrial footprint. And each person, you know, carries a bunch of devices on them. So you've got your smartphone, you've got your fitness bracelet, your Google goggles, your pacemaker with Wi-Fi, who thought of that idea? Your NFC bank cards and your RFID tags and your passport. I think in the States, even your ID cards have RFID. So essentially, you all carry this tech on you. And if they emit any kind of wireless signals, that's the stuff I'm interested in. I want to detect that stuff. And some of it is super easy and obvious, like Wi-Fi is unencrypted, it's verbose. Other stuff is a little bit harder, so anything cellular, GSM, a little bit tricky, but there is some stuff, pre-authentication, like the TIMSY, a temporal key to uniquely identify you. Then things like Bluetooth, not too hard to detect, and also NFC, RFID. Yeah, you need to be in fairly close range, so from a flying unit, not so useful, but you, of course, supplement the flying unit with ground-based units. So the RFID and NFC type detectors you'd have in a corridor maybe, and the Wi-Fi you'd have from the flying vehicle. 200 feet, you can't hear it or see it, but it can hear you and see you. And yep, so as I mentioned, Snoopy is a distributed framework. So you can have lots and lots of different Snoopy devices, and they all synchronize their data and send it back to one server for exploration. So you can have your 5 flying units in the field. You can have the N900 in a few agents' pockets or something, and a whole bunch deployed in, you know, train stations and shops. And as you guys walk around, emitting your digital terrestrial footprint, we can just suck that stuff up and synchronize it and watch you as you move around. Now, what's interesting is even if your devices are individually non-identifiable because of crypto or whatever, sometimes just based on the collection of those devices. So you might have a unique collection of signatures, even though you can't individually identify them. So kind of a cloud of devices that we can use to uniquely identify you. This is what Snoopy looks like. So just running it on a Linux box here. And when it runs, you can specify the iFlag, get all the plugins. So we've got interesting stuff, so like Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. On the Wi-Fi side, we do cool stuff like, so have you guys ever heard of Fire Sheep? Yeah, Fire Sheep. So that's kind of defunct. So I built Fire Lamb, which is its little brother. And essentially, with the Wi-Fi plugin, it also sniffs any network traffic for cookies and passwords and that kind of thing. I also grabbed WPA handshakes for later offline cracking. Some data synchronization between servers, rogue access points. So your phone's looking for Starbucks. My device will respond and say, hey, I'm Starbucks. You'll connect and you'll happily browse your Facebook and I'll steal all your data. What else have we got? Wi-Fi, sysinfo, man in the middle stuff, Wiggle. So that website I mentioned, so Wiggle plugin will look at the networks you're looking for and turn them into GPS coordinates and then into Google Street View photographs. And yeah, as I said, it's modular, so you guys, you know, come along and contribute. So at the moment, I'm fiddling with some GSM, iBeacon, SDR, some other bits and pieces, maybe some other ideas. So OpenCV, so image detection. So currently we're able to have a camera, so we can detect faces, and maybe we can correlate that with the identification of a unique MAC address. And if you have enough overlap, if there's a corridor and you walk through this corridor a few times a day, each time I'll extract your face, and each time there'll be a few MAC addresses around you, but given enough observations, I'll eventually identify just one MAC address correlated to one face. Cool. So what is our methodology? We've got our vehicle. We have the autonomy with something like the drone deploy or similar devices. You know, QA ground control, that's all open source, so we can build our own. We have a payload, which is the Snoopy hacking software, and we have a ground control down the bottom there. So let's think about a few use cases. So the one idea I have is that if you want to find an existing, say, person of interest, so all kinds of scenarios, say that someone's arrested and you check the MAC address of their cell phone, say no to look for that for later, or say that we're after a celebrity and we attend multiple events that we know they're attending, and we look for the overlap of one unique signature from all those events to uniquely identify that person. However we get it, we can use the flying machine. We can say, go on a search pattern and kind of take this spiral route here. Keep doing this until you detect that pattern that we're interested in. The most simplest case, just the MAC address. And at that point, hover, drop water balloons, return to base, take a photograph, or whatever you like. So in terms of usefulness of putting this stuff on a flying machine, bypassing physical barriers. So if there's big walls, men with guns, dogs, where you can't maybe get a Yagi and maybe get a good look or something, but with a device like this, we can bypass those physical restrictions and fly past protections or fly over borders or over jurisdiction where you're not allowed to be. And that can be very, very useful. Another use case, say for example, downtown Las Vegas, there's a riot breaking out because I don't know why people would riot in Vegas, not enough booze or something. So big riot breaks out, and I could launch this device from just outside and autonomously fly it. Just click on my map, right, go to downtown Vegas. I've got my FPV camera pointing down so I know when I'm over the crowd and identify all the persons down below for future prosecution or interrogation. And you can identify them and potentially figure out where they live and where they work and who they are, and just full data interception. Of course, with all these kinds of things, there's horrible things that can be done. So maybe in an oppressive regime, there's a peaceful protest and the government uses the same tech to go and hover over the peaceful protesters and identify them for future prosecution. So I guess it does go both ways. But from this little discussion here, another really useful idea is that if you want to scour an entire city, so if you want to fly over cover the whole of Las Vegas, it's fairly trivial to put in a grid pattern, and because it's got a GPS device, you have correlation between the position and the devices detected down below. It's kind of like the Wiggle database. So it's almost like war driving, but for client devices. So you can identify people down below very, very quickly, much faster than a ground-based unit. A term that I'd like to coin, deauthentication bombs. So we can fly over an area and drop deauthentication bombs. What that means is just emitting deauthentication packets, which will force devices to disassociate from their wireless networks. Why? Well, then they reassociate and we capture their WPA handshake for later cracking. So you can just scour, go on a nice grid pattern of an entire city, just dropping these deauth bombs, grabbing all the WPA handshakes. It syncs the data in real time back to our servers where we're kind of in real time cracking them as we go along. So, and all of that's already in Snoopy. So if you download it, you can play with it at the conference today, but you shouldn't. But it's there. Okay, I've got a quick video to show you, demonstration. Let's see if it works. Because the demo gods were a little bit cruel when I was setting up, and you guys couldn't see my screen at first. And you can't see that. Maybe if I drag it over here or over here. Okay, so this is a video demonstration of some snippy data that I've collected. And this is the interface that you browse from data collected from the drone and from ground-based units. It's called Multigo, and it's just a visualization tool to explore the data. And the scenario is that somebody's landed at Heathrow Airport, and they're a person of interest. We don't know what time they landed or what flight, but we know they landed there. We also, and we have a Snoopy device at Heathrow. We also have Snoopy devices at a whole bunch of local airports, coffee shops, and we have the aerial units flying over local parks. So it's a London example, Hyde Park. And I'm going to run a machine, which is a series of transforms, which will look at all those, I guess, about 10 drones there in the field running now, and it looks for one device that is at Heathrow, at one of those hotels, and has been observed in one of the parks, and it identifies just one device there. And that's, sorry, it's not full screen, I realize. And it identifies this one device, Marsha's iPhone. We identified the name of the phone by passively intercepting her communication. She was on an open network, passive, so very passively. She had no idea we intercepted her data, but from DHCP leases and other bits of information, we identified the name of her phone, which turns out to be her name. We see her phone is probing for those seven networks there. We geolocate those networks through the Wiggle database, and we notice that BT Home Hub network she's looking for there geolocates just one address, so we have a very good chance that we know where she lives now. And there's a Google Street View photograph of her house. And what we can also do, let's just get rid of those. And what we're going to do, now I'm going to look, are there any other devices, any other people looking for any of the networks that Masha is looking for? Because that would reveal people she's traveling with, so friends or family or colleagues or something. And we notice a whole bunch of other people looking for the same network, that same network she's been looking for. If it's stuff like Starbucks, it's not so interesting. If it's stuff like a BT Home Hub there, that's probably either a second device of hers or her partner or somebody. And on the side there, RBS, that seems like a work address. It's Royal Bank of Scotland, it turns out. So it looks like she's traveling with some work colleagues. And then we can do the process again, identify each of her work colleagues, geolocate them, try and intercept any of their data, and see what they're up to. Let's just skip forward a bit. Okay, so now from the passive data interception, 2 minutes passive data interception, I'm also having a look at what website she's been visiting, what cookies from those websites. So she's logged into various like Yahoo and whatever. I've got her cookies. And my favorite, fetch SSL. So I was running SSL strip, all pretty in the background, and there's SSL strip data. Essentially, SSL strip is a way to trick your browser into not using SSL, and I've extracted passwords there for a bunch of websites that she was using. Now, a lot of this stuff isn't new. What is new is bringing that tech together and bring it together in a nice visual framework, and one in which you can use lots and lots of data very easily, very quickly. Snoopy has some friends. This kind of data interception is being actively done in retail. So when you go to shopping malls, military, these guys like Netline and Verint, they sell packages like this. Snoopy's the only one that's open source and free. Here's a drone survival guide for you guys for later, so you know how to survive the apocalypse. The good, so I've got about a minute left. I don't want you guys to think that drones are bad and evil and we should ban them. They have a lot of good functions too. I'm just a hacker, so I've kind of had some hackery ideas. But there's far more good, I think. The life rings there, that's a drone, I think somewhere in the Middle East. Essentially, if someone's drowning, it flies out and drops them. Agriculture, inspecting pipelines, providing internet. Very briefly, site launch. So we're starting a commercial service around this. If you guys are interested, there'll be a free option as well. It's called Shadow Darkly. Watch our blog for the site launch. Essentially, you can build your own drone or buy one from us just the sensor, rather just the sensor device, and it'll synchronize data to our servers, allow you to explore it in the web interface. It's a free option or a paid for option. It's the first time I've ever tried to commercialize something, so I'm hoping it kind of goes well. I'm going to give away one Snoopy sensor to a lucky audience member. I want you, there's so many of you, it's a bit hard to run a competition. I want you guys to tweet this hashtag, and I'll write a program to automatically pick one at random this evening. And yeah, whoever it picks, I will post a Snoopy sensor device. It's a sensor device like this, set up, ready to go, so you can surveil, track, intercept, and all of that. Here's a paper I've written, Digital Terrestrial Tracking, the Future of Surveillance. I think it should be on your CDs, your conference CDs. And this evening, I'll put it on the SensePost blog too. Final point, my colleagues are giving a talk tomorrow at 4 p.m. entitled Mana from Heaven, and they're looking at improving rogue AP attacks. And that's all. Thank you very much.